noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And welcome to Friday afternoon here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Very grateful that you tuned in. I appreciate that. Thanks as well to everyone who was around yesterday to fill in for me while I was off for a bit. Paul Lisnick was the host yesterday. In the studio now is Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
I think it's been a while since we've been together in the studio.
Yeah, we've had a little vacation time, right?
Maybe the last time we were together was our last day at our old house. Was that possible?
No, you know, I've been to the new place once, okay. So I'm still learning my way, but it's pretty awesome up here, right?
So in the second half hour, we're going to talk to Taylor Tepper from Bankrate.com. They did a study about best states to retire in. Chakarama, Illinois didn't do so well. South Dakota was number one.
Oh, funny.
But here's the thing that interested me. Are you better off or not better off retiring near your kids? So if your kids move to a different state, should you follow them or not?
Interesting question. I personally want to be near a hospital. I was telling someone the other day, I want to be within shouting distance of Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Like, I literally want them to hear me if I say help.
Well, that's an interesting question. I hadn't considered that. But the idea is they say that you're not necessarily better off chasing your kids. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. How about chasing little Pokemon critters? That's back?
It's back. And you probably remember a little bit about last year.
So
when there
I remember
was,
you telling
yeah.
me about Pokemon Go. I had no idea about the big Pokemon Go festival. And then we previewed it, and then things went horribly bad.
Yeah, it didn't go well last year, right? There were two major problems. That was lines. People weren't getting into the event fast enough. And cell phone connectivity, which is a must because that's the whole point of the game.
It's an augmented reality game, right?
So it is.
You run around anywhere, right? And you chase these little Pokemon characters that pop up on your phone.
Yep, it's a game.
If you don't have cell phone contact, it's not going to work.
Yeah, you capture them. It's a game. And one of the things that the makers have done to make it kind of continue to be fun, because it is 2 years after it debuted, and it's kind of not in the zeitgeist so much, but this weekend's festival in Lincoln Park is sold out, so there's still people out there doing it. They've created more challenges and games and ways you can play with other people to conquer a task. So they've introduced some new ways to play it. All will be on display this weekend here in Chicago.
But it's fascinating to me because not only did they have trouble last year, there were lawsuits, there were great refunds, and yet they managed to sell it out again. So that tells you that the fans are either have very short memories or are incredibly loyal to the idea of the whole thing.
Yeah, and the festivals also give you some unique options. Like if you're a collector, which is the purpose of the game, it gets you competitive about it. There's certain, you know, figures that you can only collect if you go to the festival. There's ways to play in tandem with other people. So it's not like the kind of video game where you're in the basement all the time. It's like literally getting you outside, interacting with other people. So I think people like that aspect.
Have they tried to take steps to make sure things are better this year?
They have. They've worked with the cell phone companies to make sure that there's better boosted, you know, signals at the event. So all four major cell phone companies have participated in that. And they're doing more of a scanning method where you don't have to wait in one line kind of thing to get in. They're going to be checking people in within the event.
They're very secretive, right? We don't know how many tickets. They say it's sold out, but they don't really tell us how many they've sold.
Exactly.
All right, let's go on an airplane together. I know there have been, we've talked in the past on this show about United and American having these programs where they want the personnel who have interaction with the passengers to really engage them and seem as if they're happy they're there, which I'm sure they are. But now Blue Sky has a piece about big data and how the airlines are using big data to maybe incorporate that whole thing to make the passengers feel more welcome. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so the business section wrote about this, and it is a way to use the data that we all know. This always comes up, but now it might be the flight attendant who knows that on your connecting flight, you had a really bumpy ride, or you got in late, or, you know, details about your journey that might help them maybe give you a little extra attention, give you a free drink, or at least express that they know what you've been through today, and just ways to be a little friendlier.
That might weird me out a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, if they know that I like my martini with a lemon rind.
Yeah, there's always that danger, right? That if they get too close to anything you don't want them asking you about, especially in front of other passengers, you might be like, back off with knowing too much about me.
Right. Oh, man, I know in 1978 that baby behind you really kicked your seat.
Yes, I'm going to give you a free cocktail today.
And so that's part of it, too, right? Because they now have the ability to sort of issue rewards, not refunds, but sort of rewards if things go bad while you're on the plane.
Yeah, and, you know, there's always bad publicity when things go wrong. So, you know, this is maybe a way to fend off some of that and just get that bedside manner to maybe be a little better with passengers, keep everybody a little happier to begin with.
All right, we'll see how that goes. That is what's going on the airlines. Oh, so earlier this week, too, was the 10th anniversary of Apple's App Store, right?
Can you imagine? It 10
is
just, years.
It is amazing to me how much our world has changed in 10 years.
Yeah.
Now, you guys wrote a piece about how influential the app is and how much they're selling. In fact, it's the biggest growth area for Apple, right?
Yeah, and the numbers are pretty amazing. I mean, when the App Store launched with 500 programs in it, so 500 things that you could do with your phone, now there's 7 million apps and a billion iPhones. So it's been, as we know, a transformative change in all of our lives.
Wasn't there a time a couple of years ago where they said the app was going to go away and that you were going to do things, what, maybe through Facebook or other portals like
that?
Yeah,
through Facebook and web-based things and things. There definitely was that kind of thing. But I feel like we're all just governed by apps now. I mean, I use a parking app in the morning. I use apps for weather, apps. So that definitely didn't happen.
10 years ago, how many iPhones have you had in 10 years?
I would have to count, but I would say I get one probably every other cycle or so. So I've probably had 4 or 5.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if you had the one you had 10 years ago, how limited you would be. Probably.
Well, and you know how the size is always shocking? When you get a new one, you think, this is way too big. And then the next one, you think, this is way too small. And then, you know, within 2 days, you don't know how you ever used anything else.
Andrea Haines is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Great to see you, Steve.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on this Friday afternoon, another beautiful summer afternoon. Tom Gimbel is in the studio. The CEO of LaSalle Network comes by on most Fridays. Tom,
good to see you.
Nice to see you. So I don't know if it was this week or last week that quit rate came out.
Yeah.
And it's the highest since, 2000? It was the highest in 17 years, I think. So 2001, something like that. So the idea is that people are voluntarily
They're not afraid to quit their job because they know it's easy to get another one.
So things are good.
There's right now what the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows is that there's actually, for the first time in however many years, there's more job openings than there are people who are looking.
So most of the time when we talk, we're talking about employers and how they find good employees.
Yes.
But let's switch a little bit now. If you are an employee looking for a new spot, what do you look for to find out that you're going to be a good fit?
Well, I think number one, you got to keep your ego in check. And it's a supply and demand in the inverse right now, but it'll change, whether it's 18 months or 3 years, right? Quit for the right reasons. Don't quit because you're greedy. Don't quit. You know, if you're, air quotes, burned out, okay, if that's really the case, if you've been doing it for a long time, if you've been doing it for 2 years and you're burned out, maybe
you
need to look
you.
In the mirror a little bit. But if you're sitting there saying maybe this is the time you've wanted to take a sabbatical, you've wanted to go travel, and you're however many years of experience, go do it. I do believe that in 6 months the economy will still be good. I had an old employee
wow,
of mine.
That's a gutsy thing to do.
There's people that do it. I would say I'd feel a lot better about doing it now than I would have 2 years ago.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's a millennial thing too, I think.
Yeah, I think so, but there's also, you and I are almost that, right? There's a midlife crisis for some folks, so they're not afraid to do that. I just think right now the market is really healthy. Now, the problem really is if you've been a job hopper and now you've got a good thing, you're still a job hopper. And when things reset, that's not a good thing, right?
To be a job hopper.
Yeah, but
if
you've been really stable and you've always thought about taking a leave or giving it a shot, it's a pretty good market.
Okay, so my daughter just got a job in L.A., and I don't mean to keep talking about her, but it applies in this case. So she was talking to different people, interviewing different people, and used Glassdoor quite a bit.
Sure.
To sort of get a gauge on what the job or the environment might be like. Valuable, right? But there must be other things.
It's valuable. Anything that's anonymous is skewed to an extent, right? So it's just like Yelp reviews.
Sure.
Right? So you go through this and there's a variety. And I say that unbiasedly. We were a 2016 Best Places to Work by Glassdoor. So it's been benefited me. There's also reviews up there that I know aren't true that were, someone who got fired wrote on there.
Right.
So it's a double-edged sword. I think that when you're looking for what type of company you want to work at, you take it with a grain of salt. Right? It's kind of like,
it's an arrow, but it's only one arrow in the quiver.
Well, listen, if you're dating and you meet somebody who's divorced, do you go to ask their former spouse what they were like?
No, I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that.
I would not do that.
Right?
No.
So let's ask the right research and think about who's giving the information. Somebody who's been fired from a company, maybe they're really one of the unique few that's objective. And there are a lot of good people out there. But a lot of people get fired and they leave a little bitter.
So what do you do?
Well, a couple different things. Number one, you should talk to both employees who still work there. You should also talk to other companies that might be in that space and see what the reputation of the company is. Also, if there's a company that has had bad publicity, that doesn't mean it's a bad place to go.
Sure.
Because maybe they're in the rebuild phase, and maybe there's a new leader on board, and you can be part of that team.
So how do you do that? Do you talk to the competitor? You say, hey, I'm thinking of taking a job over at X?
There is a great value with LinkedIn. And you'd be surprised that you're 2 degrees away from a lot of people. So when I say a competitor, it might be that I'm looking at WGN. I don't know you, but somebody knows me who knows you.
Right.
Right? And you say, hey, good place to work. You like it?
There was an article in Fast Company that I referred to earlier in the show, and they had seven different things to observe. And they seemed a little, some of them seemed a little odd to me. One of them was to look at the bathroom. Did you read that?
No, I read it. I don't have the list in front of me.
They said, look at the bathroom, and because if the bathroom is clean, that shows that the employees respect their workplace. If it's not, that shows they don't have respect for where they
are. Yeah, except if you're on a high-rise in Chicago, and it's a shared floor, and there's a law firm that's there, and you don't know who's leaving the...
Or you're in there after one particularly clean person or one particularly nasty person.
Right.
So we'll throw that out.
I think we throw that one.
Take a tour of the place and take a whiff of it, and if you smell a lot of people eating lunch at work... That might be a sign that the boss doesn't value your personal time.
Or the people really like their job and they want to be there. They like their coworkers, they eat across, or perhaps they actually leave exactly at 5:30 in the afternoon, and because they're eating lunch at their desk, they don't have to stay as late. I mean, there's a variety. Maybe they make their lunch and bring it because they're frugal, and the people who you're going to work with watch their dollar, and they don't want to go spend $12.
All right, we're going to throw that one out, too. See if the executive team is present in the house.
I think it's a big thing.
What's that about, then?
So, it really depends on the size of the company, right? If you're interviewing at J.P. Morgan in Chicago, Jamie Dimon isn't walking around the teller office.
Sure.
Right? However, if you're in a small to medium-sized company that's got one or two locations, is the C-suite around? Are they present? Are they involved?
And so the idea is that if they're there, then they are active. They're not just sort of these absentee landlords.
That's exactly right.
Observe the start of the day or the end of the day to see how quickly people go in.
You know what? Looking for a job is very similar to buying a home. If you only go at 2:00 in the afternoon, you don't know how many kids are in the neighborhood. You don't know what it's like if the train's coming by. You don't know when the sun's coming in the backyard. You go at different times and see what it's like.
That's Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Listen, if you leave, but we do share bathrooms with other offices, so don't judge.
Are they just men's and women's? Are they transgender? What do we have here? I just want to make sure that we're all okay.
We do have an all-share.
Never know, right? I used to be on Ally McBeal. Remember, the men and women would go into the bathroom together.
Right. Have a good weekend, Tom.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on this Friday afternoon. Doma Tipango, are you still in the newsroom there? I think I can
see. I am.
All right, so we're waiting on a guest to talk about inclusivity at the office. Easier for me to say. It's like saying domati. I had trouble earlier this week with that. But while we're waiting for that, talk to me a little bit about these indictments that came down today. There have been indictments in the past. They didn't involve Russian officials, right? These are Russian government officials who are facing charges.
Exactly, and that's what's different. Before, we were talking about, you know, Russian nationals, people from Russia. Right now, we're talking about Russian military officials, a coordinated effort, according to Rod Rosenstein, with 12 military officials, Russian officials, who coordinated in an effort to hack the Democratic National Committee's emails and also stole information on 500,000 U.S. voters after hacking the DNC.
Because I know Putin said in the past, he said, well, you know, and there might have been some people from Russia who were especially interested, but he dismissed it that way, saying it wasn't government people. Now, just ahead of the president meeting with the president, Putin and Trump, here the U.S. government is indicting people who work for Putin, saying that they interfered in the election. Sets quite a dramatic backdrop for the summit coming up later this week.
That's right, and President Trump is mostly concerned about exonerating himself, because I know what he'll more than likely latch on to a talk about is when Rosenstein admitted that there was correspondence correspondence between these Russian intelligence officials and American citizens, but that correspondence confirms no accusations of wrongdoing. So we don't even know, based on that press conference, I'm still digging in here to find more information. But as far as I heard, or what we've seen in the newsroom, heard any confirmation that even those contacted by Russian officials knew that they were in contact with them, and what that might mean.
All right, that's Domati Pongo in the newsroom. We'll have more from Domati coming up in the news at 1 o'clock. On the phone line now is Betty Ng. She's the CEO of Inspiring Diversity. Betty, how are you?
Great. How are you? I'm excited to be here.
Okay, so, you know, we hear a lot about diversity, and I've been hosting the show for several years, and I think is not in dispute, right, that the more diverse an office is, or a workplace is generally, the better off those workplaces will perform.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Yeah, there's been a lot of research done. It's clear that diversity, for example, promotes innovative solutions and products because diverse perspectives are more likely to generate new and different ideas and really keeping the company at the forefront. Diverse teams can help an organization to broaden its marketing and customers because if a company only employs employees that only represent a small portion of the market, that company just doesn't have access to the experiences and insights of the entire marketplace that they could potentially tap.
They could be wholly well-intentioned, wonderful people, but there's just an ignorance there that you can't overcome. So that's diversity. I get that. You're introducing a new term to me. I can't never say it, inclusivity, as opposed to diversity. So explain to me the difference between the two and also then the relationship between the two.
Absolutely. So I like to quote Brené Myers, diversity is being invited to the party, whereas inclusion is being asked to dance. And so diversity is more about representation of, you know, different people of different backgrounds and different perspectives. And inclusion is more about a workplace that actually allows people to feel comfortable bringing their whole selves to the table and contributing
I would imagine in
a productive manner.
I would imagine a lot of managers think they've done the job if they have achieved diversity, if they can look at their roster and say, well, we've got three of these, four of these, five of these, one of these, that they've done the job. Your argument is they haven't done the job at all, right? There's work to be done.
So it's a good first step to have the representation. But at the end of the day, what you need to do is create that inclusive environment where you are understanding and leveraging the strengths of your employees and really encouraging them to bring their whole selves to the table and really positioning them to develop so that they can ascend to those leadership roles. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations, while they may hire, a relatively diverse pool, what happens oftentimes is that they lose. They lose their talent because their talent isn't feeling like they are in an inclusive environment where they can thrive they are being positioned to grow.
I was reading a piece you wrote, reading it earlier this morning, and you talked about, you know, if you create this environment, if you create this inclusive where people are felt valued and challenged at the same time, then those workers are more inclined or more comfortable bringing, quote-unquote, their whole selves to the workplace. If you don't, people hold back and everyone suffers.
Yes, absolutely. That people hold back. At the end of the day, they don't contribute their valuable perspectives. And oftentimes, they're not happy and they won't stay. So it's very counterproductive for the company. At the end of the day, they wind up not tapping into that talent and actually losing good talent, which impacts the bottom line. Retention, as we know, is really bad. Poor retention is really bad for a company, especially they lose their good employees.
And we were just talking earlier in the show about the quit rate and how it's so high these days because there are so many opportunities out there. Okay, so talk to the bosses. It's nice to say you should be inclusive, but how? Give me some concrete steps. What do people do?
Yeah, so one thing is, first of all, understand your employee base and the differences and leverage those differences within your employee base. Do an honest self-evaluation of where the holes are within your organization and what needs to happen. And, you know, thirdly, what you really need to do is make sure you put your money where your mouth is and and create systems and have those resources and true practical action plans that can really push diversity and inclusion forward in terms of creating systems and processes that support and facilitate a truly inclusive, collaborative, and high-performing environment. And that's what Inspiring Diversity has been really focused on. It's not just talking about diversity and inclusion. We provide a practical solution for building inclusive, collaborative, and high-performing organizations.
Betty Ng,
so it's really, yes.
I was going to say, Betty Ng, the CEO of Inspiring Diversity. Thanks very much for coming by today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Sometimes, when a company creates a marketing promotion, they just don't know how much buzz it will create. And that was the case for Midwest-based Build-A-Bear during their Pay Your Age event. The huge customer response overwhelmed Build-A-Bear workshops across the country and forced the stores to cut off lines early and provide patrons with vouchers for a later date. These customizable bears can cost upwards of $25, so I guess parents with 4 and 5-year-olds couldn't pass up a good deal. And good news! The city of Chicago is moving in the right direction. The Moody's Investor Service just upgraded Chicago's city and CPS debt rating up from negative to neutral and B3 to B2. What does that mean? That's what Moody's thinks the organization's creditworthiness for borrowing and expected investor loss in the case of a default would be. Okay, maybe that didn't help, but think of it like a restaurant receiving a grade from a financial health inspector, letting people know if it's worth investing in or not. And Chicago hasn't been doing great, but we're getting better. Always strive for better. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks, Orion. Our number of the week this week is 20, as in 20%. The Tribune reporting today that up to 20% of Cook County property taxes underwent hand assessments to change the value of a home established by the computer system. So there's a county computer system that spits out the value of their home. The Tribune says 20% of the time an analyst goes in and changes it by hand. And sometimes they rely on sites like Zillow or Trulia to determine the characteristics of your house. Get this, you can go into Zillow and change the characteristics of your house, but apparently the Cook County Assessor's Office thinks that's good enough, and they've been relying on that to set your tax rate. So the number of the week, 20%.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, on a phone line now is Taylor Tepper from Bankrate.com. They looked at the best states in the union to retire to or in, and, well, Illinois didn't fare so well. Taylor, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
I'll tell you what, we can go over the statistics and all of that, and we'll do that in a minute, but I'm sort of most fascinated in some of the findings the Bankrate study came up with. I mean, some of the, it seems that what we think is a good idea when we want to retire maybe isn't reality a good idea, right? Our belief system sort of butts up against the real world, and sometimes we've got it wrong.
I think that's an excellent way to put it. There's this narrative out there, there's this cultural bias that we have that when it comes to retirement, we are like birds. We have to migrate south and live in the warmth with near the beaches. And the research shows that that's really not the stuff that makes us happy. What really makes us happy are the strength of our social relationships with our friends and our spouses, our partner. And so just as you save money in your 401k every year when you work or your IRA, it's important to tend to your relationships, to maintain your relationships, because when you retire, having those strong, meaningful, you know, partnerships with your spouse or your best buddies to go, you know, do whatever it is you like to do on the weekends becomes more and more powerful because your identity as a worker recedes.
The study shows that you're better off living around your friends than moving to live near your children.
Yeah, so that's one of my favorite academic papers is that, I mean, I think it really dovetails with what how people really respond to this kind of stuff because it's, you know, the relationship with adult children is complicated and it's ripe with all kinds of baggage and emotional stuff. And it's important to have those relationships.
Sure.
I'm not telling people,
right.
You know, don't disregard your kids. But what's the stuff that makes you really happy? The stuff that brings you joy is also being with your friends and the strength of your relationship with your spouse. So don't undercut those things. Don't think to yourself, I'm just going to move and live where my kids are living, because what about where your friends are? What about your social network?
And there certainly are. I mean, there certainly are people who can go live wherever and automatically create a great friendship core. I mean, I'm not one of those people, but there are. So there's that. Okay, the other thing then, before we get to sort of the numbers, is this idea, well, I'm going to ease into retirement and do it gradually, piece by piece, and that will give me a happier retirement. That's not necessarily true either.
No, yeah, there's this really interesting paper from Boston College, Center for Retirement Research, that shows that people, there is no real evidence that shows that people who retire immediately or people who phase into retirement are any happier than anyone else. So what is important, what does sort of elicit happiness, is control. You don't want to be shoved to the side. You want to have some sort of control over your retirement, which is difficult for people, especially as they get, you know, necessarily as they get older into their job. That becomes much, much more hard, and people sometimes end up retiring before they want to because they get laid off and they can't find another job.
All right, let's go to the rankings. And Illinois comes in as the 44th best state to retire to. But again, it's subjective, I suppose, because if you have a strong core of friendships here and history here, you would tend to be happier, maybe. South Dakota comes in number one. The 38th worst weather does South Dakota have, but they rank number one in well-being. So why do we want to retire to South Dakota?
So like you said, they perform very well in that well-being ranking that we use from Gallup. And that judges people's sense of purpose when they get out of bed in the morning, their sense of community, their relationships, their physical and economic health. But they also did. It's also a very low tax state, and that's important for people who are living on a fixed income. You know, so many people rely on Social Security for so much of their income, especially in this retirement crisis that we're dealing with right now, that having low cost of living, low taxes are important. So that's why South Dakota did really well. But to your point, if you have a situation in Illinois, you're living in Springfield or something, and you're really, you enjoy your friends, you like your place of worship, you feel a real connectedness to the and pride of your community, I'm not telling you to move to South Dakota, but what you should take away from this report is to enhance those things. Those things are really important and value them.
Put your wealth in developing your friendships.
Exactly.
Taylor Tepper is an analyst at Bankrate.com. You can read more from the study and see just why Illinois is at number 44 at Bankrate.com. Great to talk to you, Taylor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.